So we're going to talk about Gaussian integrals and calculus of variations. And the first two lectures will be just about Gaussian integrals, the second two about calculus of variations, which would mean also considering variational derivatives, Euler Lagrange equations, and conservation laws from Noether's theorem. So maybe many of you have heard about many of those things or know all of them, but hopefully at least some will learn something new. And even if you know, still pay attention because these are important things, and that's why there's this mini course before your core courses begin, so that you can be reminded of various important issues that you'll need later on in various other courses, especially, say, in quantum field theory. So the plan for today is going to be the following. So first, we'll consider Gaussian integrals in one dimension, then multidimensional Gaussian integrals, and then we'll begin talking about averages with Gaussian integrals. And we'll talk more about this next time also. So any questions so far? Or if you think all of this is very trivial, let me know, and we can just meet again tomorrow. OK, so let's assume that it's not that trivial. So let's consider first Gaussian integrals in one dimension. And we're going to start with the simplest example. So consider the following integral. Oh, and is this large enough? OK. And feel free to interrupt if you have any questions or comments, except if the comments are not about the lecture. So we begin by considering the simplest Gaussian integral, which is integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, e to power minus a x squared over 2 dx. And we want to compute this integral, where also the important an important point is that a is positive, a positive real number. This will be important for convergence of this integral. So let's see how we can compute this integral. So it's actually useful to consider first the square of the integral. So it's useful to consider, let's call it I hat, integral which is from minus infinity to plus infinity dx, integral from minus infinity to plus infinity dy, and now exponent to minus a x squared plus y squared over 2. Now, this integral, one can recognize, is just the square of the one that we want to find. So in particular, if we compute this integral, then the one that we want to find is just going to be square root. And this integral is very easy to compute for the following reason. So we can, well, let's first introduce, in, let's consider x and y as coordinates in a two-dimensional plane. And let's consider polar coordinates in this xy plane. So if we have some point in the plane, it's going to be parametrized by a radial distance and an angle. So then, writing x and y in terms of the polar coordinates, we have x is r cosine theta, and y is r sine theta. So now we can do change of variables in this integral to r and theta. And for that, we'll also need the Jacobian. So let me write that also. So from this change of variables, we know that dx, dy will be the Jacobian of transformation times dr d theta. And I guess everybody can compute the Jacobian, but still just for completeness and because it's the first lecture, and let me write it explicitly. So it's the determinant of the matrix dx dr dx d theta dy dr dy d theta And that should be something that you can compute easily. And the answer is just r. So we have that this dx dy is equal to r dr d theta. So now let's change variables in this integral. And we obtain that I hat is equal to integral from 0 to infinity r dr integral from 0 to 2 pi. Can everybody see here? Okay, since nobody's complaining, d theta e to minus a r squared over 2. So this is now easy to compute. First of all, the theta integral is immediate. We just get 2 pi. And then for the r integral, we have integral from 0 to infinity d r squared over 2 e to minus a r squared over 2. So we can introduce a new variable, which is this. We can change variables from r squared over 2 to t. And then this integral becomes 2 pi integral from 0 to infinity e to minus a t dt, which is now very easy to compute. So we obtain 2 pi. Well, maybe I shouldn't try this intermediate step, but again, just in case. Next time I won't be so detailed. E to minus at evaluated at 0 at infinity. And so finally, we obtain that this is 2 pi divided by a. So remembering that the integral we want to compute is actually the square of this, now we conclude. And I'll write this in full because it's important to know for the future. We conclude that minus, this was our integral I, integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, e minus a x squared over 2 dx is equal to square root of 2 pi over a. And this is the basic Gaussian integral that we are going to use a lot here, and in the future you will use in various lectures, say in quantum field theory. So hopefully there are no any questions about this, right? So now let's consider a slightly more complicated example. So let's consider an integral. It's still simple, but now it depends on two parameters. So that's a new example. Integral, depending on two parameters, which is the following. Integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, e minus a x squared over 2 plus bx, this is still in the exponent, times dx. And again, a is positive as before. So now we can compute this integral by reducing it to the previous one. And to do that, well, to reduce to the previous case, we can complete the square in this expression. So we can write minus a x squared over 2 plus bx. Well, first let me take this out, minus a over 2. So we are left with x squared minus 2b over ax. And now in order to write this as a complete square, we can add and subtract b squared over a squared minus b squared over a squared. Right, so far this is just a rewriting of the same expression. But now we see that b this is a complete square. So the whole expression becomes minus a over 2 x minus b over a squared plus b squared over 2a. So hopefully no questions about this, right? Sorry. Okay, so now the integral that we want to compute becomes IAB. Well, first of all, we can take this b squared over 2a. We can just take it outside of the integral. So we have e to b squared over 2a. And then we're left with integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, e to minus a over 2 times x minus b over a squared dx. And now we're almost done, because clearly we can write, so we can introduce a new variable that is x minus b over a, and dx is equal to dt because this is a constant. So in this way, we reduce again this to the previous integral that we already computed. So, okay, let me write also this intermediate stage again, just because it's the first lecture. So we have minus infinity, integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, e minus a t squared over 2. So finally, we obtain e to b squared over 2a times square root of 2 pi over a. And for future use, let me also write another way of obtaining the complete square that will be useful when we generalize to a more complicated example soon. So we can also write this expression minus ax squared over 2 plus bx as a complete square in the following way. So we can write that it's equal to minus a over 2 times x minus x bar squared plus b squared over 2a, where x bar is the solution of the following. So x bar is determined as the solution of, let's take the expression and differentiate with respect to x. So if we solve this, we get exactly the same x bar that we had before, which is b over a. Writing it this way, however, will be more useful when we generalize in a moment to a more complicated example. So this is a more efficient way of doing completing the square, just taking the expression that we want to complete the square of, differentiating it, and finding the solution, and then we can directly write in this way as a complete square that expression. So again, for the moment, this is not useful. We already computed the integral, but it will be useful shortly. OK, so now we turn to multidimensional integrals. Multidimensional Gaussian integrals. So let's consider the following integral that now again depends on two parameters, but one parameter will be a vector and the other will be a matrix. Was it all too simple or what's funny? Okay, we'll talk about it afterwards. So now we want to consider the following integral, where here A is a matrix. I'll say a little bit more about it once I finish the integral, writing down the integral. So now this is a matrix, and this is a vector. So we have integral, now a product, I going from 1 to n, dx I. So we have a product of n dx's times exponential minus 1/2 sum I going from 1 to n xi aij xj plus sum I going from 1 to n bi xi. So, well, B is just a vector with the index I going from 1 to n. Now A, that's important to say here, that the matrix A is real symmetric. And also with eigenvalues. Okay, with eigenvalues lambda I, which are all positive. Again, that's necessary to have a convergent integral. So for each value of the index I, the eigenvalue is positive. So this is assumption for now. So let's consider first the case when the matrix A is diagonal, and then we'll consider the case when it's not, and we'll diagonalize it, yeah? Well, the limits are always like before, from minus infinity to plus infinity for each x. So, okay, maybe let me write. There are n integrals, right, for each of the x's. Each of them is like before, from minus infinity to plus infinity. So, okay, let me write here. And for brevity later on, I'm not going to write any more limits. It will always be the same limits. I'll just write product of dxi for shortness. Okay, so we consider first the case in which A is diagonal. Like I said, after that we'll consider a case when it's not and we'll diagonalize it. And the eigenvalues are lambda I, like I wrote there. So now we can write the integral in the following way. Again, this means n integrals, each one from minus infinity to plus infinity. Product dxi I going from 1 to n, exponent, since a is diagonal, in the exponent we just get sum I from 1 to n minus lambda I xi squared over 2 plus bi xi. So this is not very much different from what we had before, only we have it many times. So now we can write this. Well, first again, we have the same integral product I from 1 to n dx I. And now we can write this as a product of exponentials. And well, let me maybe use another index to avoid confusion with this one. These are separate. Exponential minus lambda j xj squared over 2 plus bj xj. And actually, we can now group each x with its own exponential. And so this becomes just a product n times of the same integral that we already computed. So we have product I going from 1 to n square root 2 pi lambda I e to bi squared over 2 lambda I. So let's write this in even nicer form. We can write it as 2 pi n over 2 product I going from 1 to n e bi squared over 2 lambda I. Now, here we have square root of the product of all eigenvalues. So let's see whether you're paying attention. So what is that equal to? OK, so we get determinant of A. So that's the final outcome here. So we're going to generalize now this for the case when A is not diagonal. So since A is a real symmetric matrix, does anyone know what we are going to do in order to diagonalize it? Anybody? So we need to use another kind of matrix to diagonalize it. What kind of matrix one can use to diagonalize a real symmetric matrix? OK, good. So some people are paying attention. Okay, so now case two, A not diagonal. So again, let me remind you, since A is real symmetric, there is some orthogonal matrix such that, so, and probably most of you know, but again, just let me remind you that orthogonal means that the inverse is equal to the transpose, such that all transpose AO. So normally that would be the inverse, but again, because this is orthogonal, we can directly put the transpose here. So that this is diagonal, so we can write it as lambda 1, lambda 2, where again, these are the eigenvalues up to lambda n, and everything else is 0. So we're going to use this matrix, this orthogonal matrix, shortly. But before that, let's first try to reduce to the previous problem by completing the square. So let's introduce, for convenience, the notation qx for the expression in the exponential 1 half xi aij xj plus bi xi. And actually, now for brevity, I'm starting to use the so-called Einstein convention or summation convention. So repeated indices mean always a summation. So I'm not going to write explicitly the sum I from 1 to n. So always summation over repeated indices in the same expression. This is a convention that is used all the time in theoretical physics, so you should not feel uncomfortable about it. So remember that, well, before we completed the square by taking the derivative, or I pointed out at the end that that's the most efficient way to generalize it, by taking the derivative of this expression and finding the solution. So let's do this. So now differentiating with respect to xk, where k is some index of this q. So we want to find the solutions of this. And, well, you can perform the differentiation. The solution x bar now is A inverse LK BK. Again, this means that there is a sum over the index k. Right? This is clear because there are two x's here. When we differentiate with respect to x, this is going to cancel the two, and we're just going to be left with AX and here just B. So then to get a solution for x, we invert A, and so that's the x bar, the solution of this equation. So then we can write this expression q by using x bar in the following way. We can write it as minus 1 half xi minus xi bar a ij xj minus xj bar plus 1 half bi a inverse ij bj. So this is just the generalization of this way of writing it as x minus x bar squared plus the term with b squared over 2a, right? This is just the same kind of thing for many indices, the same expression that we obtain by using x bar to rewrite this as a complete square. You can practice with this at home. So now, first, let me erase. So note that when we considered the simpler case, at the last stage, it was actually useful to introduce this t that is x minus b over a. So the analog here is it's useful to introduce something that is x minus x bar. So let's introduce a new variable or set of variables, yi, that we define to be xi minus xi bar. So then this, OK, let me write directly the integral. Then the integral becomes first of all, we can take this out because this is just a constant now. So remember, the integral was the integrand is e to power q. So we obtain e to, OK, that's a big expression. So let me write exponential of 1 half bi a inverse ij bj. And now we still have the integral over product I from 1 to n dy I and exponential minus 1 half y I a I j yj. Now, this is what we get directly by substituting x minus x bar with y, right? It's just this first part of q. So now this looks very much like the previous case, except we still need to diagonalize the matrix A. So to do that, to diagonalize, now we change variables. So we write the variables yi is oij, some new variables y tilde j, where O is this orthogonal matrix that diagonalizes the matrix A, right? So these are the elements of the orthogonal matrix. Okay, so we can immediately see then that this expression will become so y I a I j y j will become y say k tilde o transpose a o k l y l tilde. Can people see here? But we also need to change variables in the measure of integration. OK, I'll write top board. Any questions so far? So let's check again whether you're paying attention. So if A was not real symmetric, but say it, if it was Hermitian, what kind of matrix we would need instead of O in order to diagonalize it? Okay, good. Excellent, and we'll need that next time. So, okay. So now we also want to change variables in the measure of integration. So we have the product I from 1 to n of dy I. And this is going to be, again, some Jacobian of the transformation times product I going from 1 to n of dy I tilde. So, okay, let me maybe for last time write explicitly Jacobian. So it's again the absolute value of the determinant of dy1 dy1 tilde up to dyn dy1 tilde and up to dy1 dy n tilde. Dyn tilde. So we realize that this is just, these are just the elements of the matrix O, right? So each of those is just, say, this is O11 and O n1. So this is absolute value of the determinant. So what does this equal to? Okay, good. Okay, just for the benefit of maybe a few, maybe most know, for an orthogonal matrix, the determinant is always plus minus 1. So since we have the absolute value, we find that the Jacobian is 1. So finally, we obtain that the integral, depending on the matrix, real symmetric matrix A and the vector B, becomes, so now we can use what we already computed before for the diagonal case. And so the answer is 2 pi n over 2 divided by the square root of the determinant of A. Times exponential one half bi a ij, well, a inverse ij bj. So this kind of integral will play an important role later on, say, when you study quantum field theory. By the way, do people know that or not? How many people knew this already? Can you raise your hands? Okay, so let's assume it wasn't a waste of time. Okay, so I guess I'm moving maybe too fast. So I'm going to the last point, which is averages with Gaussian integrals. So that's the last point 3 of today's plan. averages. With Gaussian in the, with Gaussian weight. So let me first say what we mean by this. What is an average with Gaussian weight? So the definition is this. Well, first of all, the notation is with such angle brackets. And let's say we have m axis with indices going from k1 to kn. So this means the average of this product. So now our definition is, first there is some normalization that I'll specify in a moment. But for now, it's just some normalization constant. And then integral product I going from 1 to n dx I. Again, this means that there are n integrals, and each one is from minus infinity to plus infinity. Now we have this quantity here as an integrand, x k1 up to x km. And now comes the weighting factor, which is the exponential minus 1/2 x I a ij xj. So whatever we want to average is part of the integrand. The other part is the weighting factor, which here is this Gaussian weight that before was just the integrand of the Gaussian integral. And also, let me specify the normalization. So this normalization constant is just 1 over the integral that we had before that depended on a and b, but now with b equal to 0. So this is that same integral that we computed, but substituting b equals 0. So we are just left with this prefactor. So that's the normalization. So let me write also that. So this integral, a 0, is equal to 2 pi raised to n over 2 and divided by square root of the determinant of A. Okay, so now we're going to consider computing integrals like this that give those averages. Which integrals play important role in statistical physics or quantum field theory in various places? Okay, so now let's make an important observation that will help us compute those integrals. Namely, we can write x, say xk1, as a derivative with respect to bk1 of exponent bi xi, and then evaluate it at vector b equals 0 is the same as, so this is the same as bi equals 0 for every I. I'll use those interchangeably. Whether I write vector b equals 0 or this, they are going to mean the same. And again, here this means summation over those two indices, but I'm not writing explicitly the summation for brevity. So with this observation, we can write this average in the following way. So we can write that average of xk1, product of xk1 up to xkn is equal to, so we still have the normalization constant, and then derivative with respect to bk1 up to derivative with respect to bkm of the integral a I of ab evaluated at all b is equal to 0. So again, this I of ab is the same integral that we computed there. And so this average is equal to this expression. Any question about this? So okay, let's write this a little bit more explicitly. Well, first of all, one can note that the normalization factor is going to cancel out, because when we compute this derivative, the normalization doesn't depend on b. So, and that's why we chose the normalization to be 1 over I of a and b equal to 0, so that we can cancel it here. So now we can write this as derivative b k1 up to derivative with respect to b km of exponent one half bi a inverse ij bj. And again, after we compute the derivatives, we set all b is equal to 0. Right? There is no confusion about that here, too. So first we differentiate, and only at the end we substitute b equals 0. So this will be useful next time. Now let's just get a little bit more familiar with it by computing a simple case of, say, product of only two axes, average of only a product of two axes. Oh, sorry. So let's consider a simple example. Which is just the product of two axes. So we have the average of xk times xl. So according to this formula, this is derivative with respect to bk, derivative with respect to bl, and then exponential 1 half bi A inverse ij bj, and in the end taking all b's equal to 0. So let's perform these derivatives. So we still have the bk. Now let's take the derivative with respect to bl explicitly. So, well, okay, first of all, there are two b's. So again, this 1/2 is going to cancel. So we can write this as A inverse Lm Bm exponential, again, of the same 1/2 Bi A inverse ij bj. And at the very end, again, we evaluated b equals 0. Now let's take this derivative. But there are two options. We can differentiate this b or the ones in the exponential. So now it's a little bit less trivial. However, one can note that when we differentiate the b's that are inside the exponential, we're still going to have this. And we have to evaluate at b0. So when we differentiate the b's in the exponential, the outcome will be 0. So the only non-vanishing contribution is when we differentiate this b. So, and after we differentiate this b, we are going to have, after we remove this b by differentiating, we are going to have just a inverse times this expression evaluated at b equals 0. So this is going to become 1, right? So the final outcome is just a inverse. So this is a inverse with indices kl, or, well, lk. Sorry. It's just because we already have the index L. And so the only non-vanishing contribution is when k is equal to m. OK, so that's an important piece of information that will be even more useful tomorrow. I have a little bit more time, so let me consider a slightly more involved case that I thought we'll look at tomorrow, but I can begin today. The case of an average of four axes. If there are any questions, feel free to ask. Right now, you may seem that there is no need to consider 4 or 5 or anything. We don't care anymore. We saw one example. But tomorrow, we'll see why it's useful to look at another example. And we'll write a general expression tomorrow. So now let's look at the case of average of 4 axes. And that will be the last thing today.
Explicitly the significance of an x with two subscripts and an x with one subscript?
No, well, I could have written x1 to xm, right? But I wrote k1 and km just because I didn't want to specify an ordering. So it could be x1 times x2 times x3 times x4. Or it could be x2 times x1 times x4 times x3, right? It could be any permutation of the indices. So that's why I wrote it k1 to km, so that it doesn't have to be ordered. It could be in any ordering. So again, maybe to comment more on your question, is because just in the sum xi, aij, whatever, there's the natural ordering. When you do the sum, you start from 1 to n, right? So I just wanted to point out that the average doesn't have to be in the same order as the integration or a sum. It could be any other order. OK, so let's consider another example, slightly more involved case. Now with four axes, and yeah, it also saves me from writing different indices. If I want to write not k1 to k4, but say k, l, m, n, I mean, I could write it that way, but it's more unified somehow. It's easier to write instead of writing different letter for each index. So we have, again, the normalization times integral of. So the measure is, again, product from 1 to n dxi x k1 x k4 times exponential minus 1 half xi a ij xj. Okay, I'm not going to write again the normalization. It's the same constant, that is 1 over I of a and 0. So, well, that's a little bit repetitious, but still let me write every step. So again, we write this as derivatives with respect to bk1 up to bk4 exponential 1 half bi a inverse ij bj. And at the end, everything evaluated at b equals 0. So let's do a few derivatives one after another, because now things are going to be somewhat more interesting than the case of just two axes. So OK, first, we have the first three derivatives intact. So with respect to bk1 up to bk3. Now let's differentiate with respect to bk4. So that's the same as we did there. Namely, we have a inverse k4 l bl exponent. Let me just introduce some notation so I don't have to write this all the time. I don't know how to call this. Let's just write it like this, right? You'll know that it's the same. I don't want to keep writing this thing. OK, let's be a bit more precise and put inverse here. So and again, at the end, evaluated b equals 0. Now, the reason things are more interesting is that now we are not going to get 0 when we differentiate the b's inside the exponent. Right, because we have still more other derivatives to take. So now we have more contributions compared to the case of just two axes. Okay, so let's take now the derivative with respect to BK3. So we continue from there. We still have the dBK1, the dBK2. And okay, so one contribution comes when K3 is equal to L. So that's the B in front of the exponential. So from that we get A inverse with indices K4, K3 times the same exponential BA inverse B, and the whole thing evaluated at B equals zero. But now we have another contribution. So, okay, we still have derivative with respect to BK1, derivative with respect to BK2. And now we differentiate the B inside the exponential. So we have the prefactor is still the same, A inverse K4L BL. And from differentiating the B's inside the exponential, we get another multiplier just like this. So we get another A inverse with indices K3 and say some M, BM. And now we have the exponential of the same expression, the A inverse B. And again, this also is finally evaluated at B equals zero. So, right, there is no question so far. Okay, so I think now it's clear what's going to happen. So those two derivatives now can only act on the exponential, and they're just going to give another A inverse. So from here we have A inverse with indices K4 times K, K4 and K3, and this is multiplied by another A inverse with indices K2 and K1. So this is all that we get from this term. Now this term, okay, in this term we are going to actually get more than one contribution, because K2 could be equal to L, or it could be equal to M. So both of those are going to be non-vanishing. So we have one term that is A inverse with indices K4, K2. So this is the term when K2 equals L. It comes from here. And then this is multiplied by A inverse with indices K3, K1. And then the last term is when K2 is equal to M. So in that case, we have A inverse with indices K4, K1 times A inverse with indices K3, K2. So any question about this? So now, one final remark. We see that when we had only two axes, the average was equal exactly to this A inverse. So actually, we can write this, that we started with, here, four axes, the average of four axes. We can eventually write it as products of averages of two, right? Each of those can be written, for example, this is just going to be average of x k4, x k3. Right? That's what we obtained from the other side. So then the whole product, let me write this because that's an important point that we're going to generalize tomorrow. So the average of four axes, we can write now just writing this in this way as average of x k4, x k3 times average, this is going to be xk2 times xk1, right? xk2, xk1, plus, and so forth, average of xk4, xk2, times xk3, xk1, and plus, finally, average of xk4, xk1, times the average of xk3, xk2. So the important point is that we can write the average of a product when we have even number. Next time we'll stress more about why only even number. When we have even number of axes, the average of the product can be written as sum of products of averages of only two. So sums of products of pairs. This reduction plays an important role in various places. So any questions about this?
So the average of an odd number of particles would be?
Yeah, okay, so that's a good question. What would be the average of odd number?
Zero.
Yeah, exactly. It's zero because there is one B left. So when we set the all B's at zero at the end, it just vanishes. So the only non-trivial contribution is when we have even number. So okay, let's write this just in case not everybody paid attention because that's an important point. So if we have, say, xk1 up to xk, so the generic way of writing an odd number is as 2n plus 1, n is any integer, right? So this is any odd. So this is always going to be 0. And next time we'll write the generic case for any number of even axes. Okay, so that's everything for today. Are there any questions?